Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. We're continuing our series of election interviews, and today my guest is Dan Maffei. He's the Democratic Party candidate for the new 24th Congressional District, formerly the 25th. He's challenging incumbent Republican Congresswoman Anne Marie Berkel in a rematch of their race from 2010. This time, Green Party candidate Ursula Rosem is also in the race. Rosem was a guest on the program last month, and I expect to interview Congresswoman Berkel in the coming weeks. Prior to serving in Congress, Dan had worked on several different congressional staffs, among other positions. Dan, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Grant.
Let me start with a couple questions about the campaign itself, and then I'll move on to some issues. The last time you ran as the incumbent, you lost an extremely close election that many observers expected you to win. What changes have you made in your approach to this election based on your experiences from that one?
Well, I think you always learn from your mistakes, and we certainly learn from ours in terms of, you know, basic strategy, where to target here and there. I think a lot of the issue was just getting voter turnout, and, you know, the district was different than the Rochester area and the Syracuse area, and there was a people in Syracuse didn't necessarily know what was going on in Rochester, et cetera. But I think the biggest difference is the fact that Anne Marie Berkel now has a record, and she had no congressional record then, obviously, and she just would throw barbs at us. But now she's got a record, and it's one of extremism. I was surprised after she got elected. I assumed that she would sort of go towards the center, closer to her district. But no, instead she is by far the most right-wing person in the state, Republican or Democrat.
Well, is there one aspect or one event from the campaign last time that you think taught you the most this time around?
Not really. I mean, I think that, what was evident is in the campaign, you know, previously is just that, was it important to, get out what my record really was. And that was very difficult. We were in Washington trying to get things done. This Congress doesn't worry about that. They just put everything off, kick the can down the road, et cetera. That said, I do think that we're doing a better job now. We certainly have a lot more volunteers, a lot more energy behind us. When I go door to door, I can sense that people have seen me around, seen my ads or et cetera. So I do think that there are some improvements in our campaign. But really, that what makes all the difference in the world is Anne Marie Berkel having a record. So people can compare record to record and see one is a centrist, moderate. Yeah, sure, I'm more left on some things, more right on others. But so is the district. And the other is Anne Marie Berkel, who is very, very right-wing, sort of follows her own path, regardless of where the district is.
I wanted to pick up on exactly that point that you were making there. And my sense from this campaign so far is that your focus really is more on her and her 2 years rather than you and your 2 years, at least in the communication that I'm seeing. And so there is this possibility, to compare record to record, but my sense is it's more about you taking on the challenger role that she had before.
Well, I am the challenger. I mean, believe me, people keep reminding me of that. But look, to be frank, what I'm trying to focus on is actually the next 2 years. I'm looking to 2013, 2014, when whoever wins this race would be in office. Middle class is truly threatened. If the next 2 years we don't take some real actions, I think, to make sure we balance the budget, but do it in the right way, to make sure that we do preserve Social Security and Medicare as a guaranteed benefit that people have paid in and have earned, those sort of things, we won't see a middle class. And Central New York is middle class. If we don't have a strong middle class, we won't have a strong Central New York.
I want to come back to some of those issues that you raised, but let me stick with the campaign again for a couple minutes. The television and the press release part of this campaign is obviously on a negative path at this point, and it's likely to intensify between now and Election Day. I was curious to know whether you worry that if the public gets turned off generally by this back and forth, that it could actually end up working more against you, given that the third party candidate is probably more of an alternative for the Democrats than the Republicans.
You know, Grant, I mean, this is a great conversation to have, I think, amongst political scientists or in one of your courses. But I just am not thinking about those things. I'm really, really focusing on you know, what our campaign is all about, the issues. We've run contrast ads where we do talk about Amory Burkle's record. I'm not going to shy away from talking about her record, whatever you want to call it. But I've also run ads that talk about my positives and what I've done, and the same thing with all other areas of the campaign. So, look, I've got to get the message out, and people do have a choice to make. I'm running against Amory Burkle, we clearly have very, very different visions, and I am going to do everything I can to get those two visions out.
Well, but it's not really an academic point that I'm making here. I mean, I'm talking about the likelihood of whether this is going to help or hurt you in the voting booth. And so, again, you've got a particular dynamic here. You've got the two main candidates beating up on each other pretty good. And then you've got this third party candidate who sits outside of that. But again, in my view anyway, would be more of an alternative for Democrats than Republicans. That seems like it could be a difficult recipe for you in a race that the polls are saying is deadlocked at, 43%.
Look, I'm running against Amory Burkle. Other candidates on the outside do, they're running. That's fine. That's our system. But I'm running against Amory Burkle. I think ultimately people will make the decision between whether they want Amory Burkle or Dan Maffei. It's going to be one of us who wins the election.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Dan Maffei, the Democratic candidate for the 24th congressional seat in New York. Well, this presidential race is being painted as one in which the differences between the two candidates are especially great, and thus the choice is quite real. One might argue that that's even more the case in this congressional race. And so you mentioned this before. I want to come back to it now. Of all of the policy positions that the two of you disagree over, what do you see as the most important ones?
I mean, I really think, again, it's, there's incredible differences in the way she views certain kinds of issues. I don't think the government has, really any business in someone's bedroom, for instance, and she's very anti-abortion, even in the case of rape or incest. But actually, that's not what I think the most important differences are. I think the most important differences are those of emphasis, because what a member of, in terms of the whether you're going to do what you can to promote the middle class and small businesses, and whether you think the economy is going to improve mostly because you help the middle class get jobs, you help the middle class make sure that they have education for their kids and can send their kids to a decent public school and then on to trade school or college, whether or not the opportunity is truly there for all of us, or whether the way to do it is to help the rich, make sure that people who have the most money and make the largest investments get the biggest breaks and hope it trickles down. I truly feel that, you can make an academic argument for that, but we've tried it. And what happened? The Bush recession. So we've already tried that. Let's try to focus on the middle class specifically. And I think that's the biggest emphasis, the biggest difference, both in terms of Burkle and I and in terms of Romney and Obama.
What more specifically in terms of policy position differences in those economically related issues would you point out as the most important differences?
Well, we already talked about taxes. Very, very different. I think that we should have a simpler tax code, a fairer tax code. But at the end of the day, I think the middle income people in this country, they pay too much tax often. And for instance, when you talk about payroll tax relief, every citizen who works pays a payroll tax. But we've had this program in place that gives people some relief on that, about $1,000 a year for working families. Amory Burkle voted, and she was the only person in New York State, the only Republican or Democratic member of Congress to vote against that, to get rid of that.
And but, so just to interrupt you, so yeah. When you were saying before about her position to raise taxes on the middle class.
Yeah.
That's what you were primarily referring to.
That's exactly what I'm referring to. And she says, well, it's we need to decrease the deficit. Well, I agree too. We need to balance the budget, but doing it in the right way. Then she turns around and she says, regardless of the budgetary effect, we need to continue the Bush tax cuts. And in fact, we are not going to even compromise. The president and the Democrats are willing to to say, well, we'll continue the Bush tax cuts for everybody making under $250,000. I've been criticized by some on the left because I'm willing to say, make it a million. We'll just only raise taxes on people making over $1 million, and we'll only bring them back to the Clinton levels. But she and her very extreme counterparts in Congress will not allow even that. That's a huge policy difference.
Well, let me ask you a tougher version of the question. What's the most important thing that the two of you agree on?
Well, I think we both agree that we come from very, very different places. I think she's the one who first pointed out that we have very, very different visions. So, I think that's clear. I mean, You know, I mean, I'm sure there's other issues we agree on, but both of us, I think, at least understand that this is a very, very an election where people really have a choice.
So you agree to disagree? It
sounds we agree like. To disagree. That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, you brought this issue up a couple times already. I want to come back to it now and contextualize it within the Siena poll that came out recently. And again, that poll had you and the congresswoman tied at 43%. The poll also asked about several specific issue areas and which candidate would do the better job on those issues. The two of you were pretty close among the public across the board on, I guess, in a sense, the approval ratings of those things. You enjoyed your largest advantage in education, and in fact, you got the nod in all of the issue areas with one exception, and that was reducing the deficit. So that's one place where I wanted to give you a chance to talk more about that issue. That's a tough one, obviously. So what strategies and choices would you see that you'd want to pursue in order to cut the deficit and begin paying down the debt?
Well, I do think that we need to balance the budget, but we need to do it in the right way. I think the difference is, for instance, don't believe that we can have Medicare and Social Security, that those are solid programs for the most part. Do they need adjustments? Of course they need adjustments, but you don't, you know, get rid of your car because you need an oil change. In the case of Medicare, the budget that Anne-Marie Berkel supports, the Ryan budget, that would take Medicare and make it into a different program. I say it would end Medicare as we know it. It would make it into a voucher program. Some people say that's not ending Medicare as we know it. I think most people understand that, you know, if you have a program that's like more like an IRA, a savings program, and you have a program that's more like a pension, that those are different programs as we know them. Another thing we could do, though, is, you know, I think that we, like Eisenhower, I don't think we should be involved in all these other countries. I would have gone out of Afghanistan years ago. Our people did a great job. But once Osama bin Laden was dead, that mission is no longer really a mission for the security of the United States. It's more of a nation-building mission. And I think, you know, that we need to build our country here. We need to build bridges and schools here, not in Afghanistan. And that would save a lot of money as well. Now, there's other areas. I mean, it's some of them more symbolic than others. All these perks that members of Congress get, they won't add up to a lot. But, you know, members of Congress shouldn't do that. I mean, they shouldn't just be involved in in their own gym and those other kinds of things. But another area, you know, is very, I do think we got to get rid of these subsidies for big oil companies. That's a big part. And I'll go back. I do think people, billionaires, can afford to pay a lot more. And people over $1 million can go back to the Clinton era rates. And I don't, that will have a good effect on the deficit. And I think it will not be I think it'll be actually beneficial to the economy because it'll help get our budget under control.
You mentioned two things I wanted to follow up on. One was the issue of Medicare. That is one issue where there has been this really intense back and forth between the campaigns on the airwaves. And so you articulated, I think, your critique of her position on Medicare in terms of the Ryan budget. But what's coming back is this assertion that you have voted to cut Medicare in some important way. Tell me what your response is there.
You know, this is the part where I think politics is in a very challenging place. I worked for Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan. I was his press secretary in the late 90s. And in your building, of course, the Moynihan Center, and it says this great quote, people are entitled to their own opinion, but not their own set of facts. I think this is a good case of that. The Republicans continue to accuse Democrats of that. Bill Clinton said in the speech during the Democratic National Convention that it takes brass to accuse someone else of what you're doing. In fact, the exact same provision that they're talking about, that they're accusing me of supporting, is in the Berkel-Ryan budget, the exact same
proposal. Okay, so what is the provision?
And what it is is that it limits the subsidies given to insurance companies to provide certain kinds of Medicare Medicare Advantage benefits, but it doesn't lower the benefit. So there was some critique that, well, maybe fewer companies would offer it, but that hasn't come to pass. So, in fact, there's no change whatsoever in the benefit, but it does save money because the insurance companies are no longer getting these overpayments. Saves money, I guess. So people say, oh, well, that's a cut, right? It saves money. But it's not a cut because then it goes back into Medicare and adds to the Medicare solvency.
Well, let me also follow up with that. You mentioned Afghanistan. And back in 2006 and 2008 when you ran and first challenged Jim Walsh, and then when you ran in 2008 for the open seat, you had asserted that Afghanistan was where the U.S. military needed to be and not Iraq. So I wanted to get your sense, and you've already given me a little bit of it, of how has that played out then? It sounds like good for a while, but not so good now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, after 9/11, when the Taliban government was clearly sheltering Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda, it was an appropriate United States mission for the national security of the United States to send our troops in. They did a fantastic job. They essentially eradicated al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and you know, overthrew the Taliban. The only thing that in the short term was not done was the capturing or killing of Osama bin Laden. But now under President Obama's leadership, that's been done as well. But since then, the mission has evolved. You know, they call it mission creep. And now the mission is you know, our soldiers are doing great work and trying to help build schools and build a society there. But that's not really what they should be doing. They should be doing things that are absolutely essential to the national security of the United States. And by having them there, it makes us less flexible to go where there's hot spots where they might really be needed. And it costs tons of money as well as the lives of our soldiers. I just think that's not. When I was a member of Congress, I took the vote very, very seriously. If you're going to put men and women in harm's way, you better do it only when absolutely necessary for national security. That's why I was the only member of Congress from a tough district to vote against the surge in Afghanistan, against my own president. I think it's time they come home. I wish they were home now already, but we've got to bring them home. It's better economically, and mostly it's better for our troops, and it's better for our national security.
In case you just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and I'm speaking with Dan Maffei, Democratic candidate for Congress in New York's 24th District. Well, I think I've heard the term middle class at least 1,000 times from Democratic Party candidates this fall. I've heard it a few times here from you just in the last few minutes, and it's prominent on your website. It even appears in writing in some of your TV ads. But the fact remains that 1 in 6 Americans lives in poverty, and almost 1 in 4 children lives in poverty. So what's happened to your party's concern for the poor?
I don't think anything has happened. I think our party remains concerned for the poor. But again, a strong middle class is absolutely the underpinning of our society, including, you know, organizations that help the poor. Having opportunity for all is very, very important. Not want to make sure every person lives it. I want to make sure everybody is American dream. Poor, middle class, wealthy, it doesn't make any difference. But it's the middle class that's really threatened right now. And that's where I'm putting my focus.
It almost seems, though, in listening to the Democrats this election cycle, that there may be kind of two sets of trickle-down arguments being put forward. And the Republicans have their version. The trickling starts higher up and goes down. And in the Democratic version, it's with the middle class and goes down.
Well, look, the key thing is working Americans. Look, I also said when every person has a job, is willing to work, gets a job. I'm not. There's no test here. You know, and most Americans are middle class and aspire to be. So I don't quite know where you would draw that line. You know, the poor is, you know, obviously a society should care for its poor. But you know, we've done that. Some of the ways we've done that are building these programs. For instance, Social Security and Medicare. Before Social Security and Medicare, over half of all seniors in the United States lived below the poverty line. Now it's less than 10%. So you would say, well, Dan, you're talking about something for the middle class. Well, of course, because we want people to be middle class and not poor. We have safety net programs, food stamps, for instance. Those are important programs. And, you know, and Anne-Marie Berkel and certainly the Ryan budgets, they've all cut those and cut those and cut those. But what's really going to bring people out of poverty is to make sure there's opportunity and jobs, and that's the focus on the middle class and small businesses.
One of the positive things that Anne-Marie Berkel is trying to highlight is her record of constituency service. How would you describe her constituency service that she's provided?
Well, you know, I mean, it's totally hearsay, so I don't know. I think it got a lot better after the first year, you know. And but having been there, you know, it's very, very difficult. Members of Congress have a lot of business, particularly in a district like Central New York, where people face a lot of economic challenges. So
let me ask one more question before we get to the three questions at the end. Let's say that both you and Mitt Romney are elected in November. How would you see yourself working with that administration? And are there any things that he's emphasizing in his campaign that you could get behind and support?
Well, regardless of whether it's Romney or Obama, we're going to need to work across party lines. And this is one of those, you know, I really think that particularly moderate Democrats like me really have a responsibility. Moderate Republicans as well, because we have to reach across lines. And I did so many times when I was in Congress, whether we were talking about the issue of the auto dealers, or whether we were talking about working on floodplains in Central New York, all these kinds of issues we worked very, very hard on. But if Romney was elected president, you know, I would do the very best I could to work with that administration. I have to tell you, there's things that he's done in the past, certainly as governor of Massachusetts, that I think one could work with. But, you know, again, he's gone so far to the right that it is hard for me to answer that question. I'm trying to think of a particular individual thing that he's proposed. You know, there's some things, but then he takes them back, et cetera. I mean, I hope tax reform. I worked a lot on corporate tax reform, for instance. I think we can do it in a way that's much more fair, that incentivizes companies to have manufacturing in the United States as opposed to the current tax code that incentivizes outsourcing. Hopefully, you know, he would work on that. But I don't know. We don't even know his tax return. And my guess is he uses a lot of these loopholes that I would be lobbying, you know, trying to get rid of. So who knows?
Let me get to the three questions. You've answered these before, but it's a new campaign, so we'll try them again.
You're going to compare my current answers to past answers.
We have not looked back for that.
I have not either, so.
First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
I would say it's Listening Out Loud. And what I mean by that is, you know, I've been privileged to be able to travel all around Central New York over the last several years. And I've heard a lot of people who don't normally have their voices heard. And I think what I'm trying to do is be a bit of a megaphone for them.
Second, what's your worst trait?
Well, I still have to say I think it's that I try to explain too much, maybe in too much detail, and maybe just talk a little bit too much about, you know, those kind of details. I got to make sure that I don't lose the forest through the trees. And that's certainly what I'm trying to do on this campaign.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Certainly on the professional side, though, I always have to say that it was the privilege of representing the Central New Yorkers for 2 years, very diverse group. And I'm not just talking about background, I'm talking about what people think and what they do. But it was an incredible honor and privilege, and I would be so grateful if people would give me that privilege again.
That was Dan Maffei. Dan, thanks so much for talking with me.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.